You are running out of stem cells. In your 80s, you have a fifth of what you had in your 40s. Literally, it's dropping off a cliff. That's why people are getting all these wrinkles.
Today on Grounded Wellness, we are joined by Dr. Joy Kong, a UCLA-trained, triple board-certified stem cell specialist, leading a revolution in regenerative medicine.
It's one of the safest therapies there is.
She demystifies the stem cell phenomenon and explains how stem cells can help with everything from autoimmune conditions to skin health.
They're anti-inflammatory. They can also kill off cancer cells. They are antimicrobial.
This episode might change the way you see your own health and aging process. Let's dig in. Dr. Joy, thank you so much for coming out to the farm.
Yes, Bethany, so happy to be here. It's amazing. I've never done barefoot interviews before.
Aw, I know. It's usually a first for most people.
Uh-huh.
I'm so excited to talk to you today because I know very little about stem cells, and this is your area of expertise. So I want to start at a very basic level. What is a stem cell, and what is all the stem cell hype about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people make stem cells sound so mysterious, and really, all you have to think about is all the way back to when you were conceived. So when your mom's egg meets your dad's sperm, and there's a light spark, and that the two come together, formed the first stem cell. So you were once a single stem cell. And from that single cell, by act of design, it knows how to multiply, how to migrate, how to gain new functions and start to form new structures, eventually forming you and each one of us walking miracles. So within each stem cell, or really any cell in the body, there's a DNA which contains the intelligence of the whole
life,
formation of life.
Yeah.
Exactly. But what's unique about stem cells is that it's wide open in its ability to form any cells. So any of our cells actually contain all the information, right? The DNA. So you can revert it back to the embryonic state. There are ways of doing that. So they will be able to have all the potentials. However, coming from that fertilized egg, that will have the ability to form different layers of this embryo, and each layer will have all these stem cells that start to gain new functions and form new stem cells that's gaining more functions. So each time when the cells evolve, it can gain function, but the moment you gain function, you lose potential. So you can't have both worlds. So either you become specialized, you're a generalist that's full of potential. So the earlier the stem cells are during the path of forming a full human, the wider the potentials are. But
okay.
The further down the road, it loses the potential and gain function until at the very end, you form all the organs, right? Your heart will have heart muscle cells that's actually working. It's no longer a stem cell. It is a working cell. But before it becomes a working cell, there's heart muscle stem cells. The only function of the heart muscle stem cells is to become a heart muscle cell. And that's the very last stage of a stem cell. But everywhere before that, all the way along, we don't know how many steps there are. It's a continuum. And it could have 1,000 variations until you give birth to the final working cell. So anywhere along the line is a stem cell. So when people say stem cells, it's not a one thing. It's everything before the working cell is formed.
Okay. And that's really the magic of stem cells, is that there are these cells that are able to create healthy cells that are different types of cells that have different functions within the body. Like for repair, like if your knee is injured and you inject stem cells into your knee, those can help to like heal that type of tissue, or depending on where you use them.
There are different types of stem cells.
Okay.
So depending on what kind you're putting in the body. If you're putting into the body cells that are only meant to form more immune cells, they may not be the best cell type to put in your knee, right?
So different types of stem cells that you use for different conditions.
Yeah. However, there's a very special group of stem cells called mesenchymal stem cells. They are everywhere in your body. So these are not quite specific to different organs or different lineages, but they are there along your blood vessels, somehow carrying the task of coordinating regeneration in your body.
Mm.
So they are like the vanguard of what you know, to detect what's going on in your body.
Yeah.
And then to organize activities.
So is that the type that you would use in an IV infusion, and then they just kind of go where they need to go?
That's very popular. That is one of the hottest cell types right now. It doesn't mean that's end-all, be-all, but right now that's it's one of the gold standards. So I do use that in our clinic because they have multiple functions. By the fact that they are in your along your blood vessels, they're trying to sense what's going on in your blood and also sensing what's going on in the neighborhood, right, where they're living. But if there's a big signal floating through your blood, let's say someone got a crush injury, right, big accident, and then the tissue got injured, and that area would send all these big SOS signals. And the cells that are along the blood vessels will sense these signals, and then they can squeeze themselves into the blood vessels to find where the signal is the loudest. Once they're there, they will squeeze themselves out and start to recruit the body to help with repair. So that's the mesenchymal stem cells, but their functions so, you know, has a multitude of functions. They're anti-inflammatory, they help your immune system to shift into a more anti-inflammatory state. So they really help a great deal with autoimmune conditions, and they can protect damaged tissue to prevent them from dying. They can also kill off cancer cells. They are antimicrobial, so they can help you fight infections.
Wow.
And they can help you generate new blood vessels. So there's a...
Sign me up.
I know. It's the one, you know, you can put one cell in the body and they do all this for you. And that's why it's really fun to help people using stem cells, because you don't need to do a whole lot as a doctor. I'm giving you one thing that's like a pharmacy. Mm-hmm. So instead of giving you one drug or two or three, I can give you this one cell that's going to give you 500 different signals.
And it just works with your body's own innate repair mechanism.
Exactly. And it's going to tailor what it gives you based on what your problem is.
So these cells, they know where to go based on what your body needs.
They do. Yeah. They trace signals.
And from what I understand, there are two different types of stem cells in terms of autologous from your own body or allogenic, which are from a donor. Can you explain the difference between the two?
Yes, that's one of the categorizations, is that you can use cells from somebody else or use cells from yourself. There are also people who are doing xenotransplants, which using from other species, from other animals.
Mm.
So that I don't, I am not a proponent of. But if you're just talking about humans, you can get cells from somebody else or yourself. So the very first stem cell treatment was actually a transplantation from one person to another. That was bone marrow transplant. So that was the very first stem cell therapy. So that's between one to another, and usually requiring some kind of matching.
Mm.
Because as adults, you and I would have differed so much.
Right.
So my stem cells would carry so much of my signal that it can trigger problems, either attack you or your body attack it. So there's mutual exclusion in a sense. But you can use younger sources that doesn't trigger that much reaction. It's very fascinating. Young cells somehow adapt to another human much more easily.
Hmm.
So that's the allogeneic. So using somebody else, allo, right, from another person. The autologous is using your own. So you can definitely harvest your own stem cells and put in places where you think your body really needs it.
And that is, you get that from?
You can get it from
fat,
all kinds
from
of
bone
sources.
Marrow.
Fat, bone marrow would be the two major sources.
How do you get it from the bone marrow?
Drill into the bone.
Oh, my gosh.
So people lie on their side. You drill into the hip bone, usually.
Do you do that in your clinic?
I don't. I don't think that's a good way. I don't think it's a best way of helping patients. You can certainly do that. You may have good benefits when a person's younger because their stem cells are still more potent and healthier. But if you're older, first of all, your number of stem cells has declined drastically. And the quality of your stem cells also is just is there, there's no comparison. You know, I've shown people the data, what happens when a person gets older. And another problem is as you get older, your cells also lose intelligence. So your cells, when it's younger, could recognize cancer cells. But when it gets older, somehow it forgets. It's like it's losing its abilities, memories of detecting cancer.
So it can cause cancer cells to proliferate?
Then it simply doesn't attack it. Because if I'm giving you umbilical cord MSCs, mesenchymal stem cells, these mesenchymal stem cells will attack your cancer cells and basically tell them to go on programmed cell death. So they all pop open and die. But if you use your own, the older you are, the less ability they are at recognizing these cancer cells. So there's direct research comparison between cancer stem cell, between fat-derived MSCs and umbilical cord-derived MSCs. They put them next to cancer cells. So they put in a brain tumor, so glioblastoma. They put it either on a petri dish or on a live animal's body, planting them next to the tumor. So in both cases, either petri dish or animal's body, the tumor that's next to the fat-derived stem cells kept growing and growing, getting bigger and bigger, whereas the tumor next to the umbilical cord-derived stem cells gets smaller and smaller, start to go away.
Why is this not being used in the oncology world?
Moment you mention oncology, then we're touching upon a particularly sensitive subject. In medicine, we call it the big C word. So when you mention the C word, then a lot of existing interests are touched upon. So there's inherent resistance. I don't know if you know, cancer is big business.
Mm-hmm.
People make a lot of money from these cancer drugs. So there's not that much incentive to use something that's natural, that is actually going to have a profound effect on either the prevention or the recovery from cancer. So there's not very much
motivation.
There's not much support.
Yeah.
And actually active suppression. So in our integrated medicine world, we know a lot of doctors who are doing more integrative approach, advocating more natural ways of treating cancer, have mysteriously passed away. So there's a lot of resistance. However, there is active research on using these stem cells to treat cancer. And there have been a lot of published articles because maybe the research institute is not having the same type of resistance. However, when it comes to the real world, it's a different matter. But even for research, the support probably will be also somewhat limited. However, even with that, there's a lot of research showing great benefits.
Is there less resistance in other countries? Like, is it just America who is more so suppressing that idea and it's more widely available, like stem cell therapies to help with cancer in other countries, or is it kind of suppressed across the board?
I think there's a lot of fear in the whole conventional medical world about this new technology. But some countries are a little bit more go forward actually faster. To be honest, the U.S. is doing pretty well as far as doing research. Countries like China also is right up there. China, Japan, they're all doing really well as far as research. But when it comes to resisting conventional therapies, there's a lot of resistance in the U.S., partially because the big pharma are very, very powerful
yeah.
in this country.
Yeah. I just ask that because I know a lot of people who have gone to Mexico or Costa Rica for stem cell treatment, and I'm just curious, like, what they're doing there that we're not able to do here? Or is it just that it's cheaper over there and that's why people are going?
It is cheaper, and the regulation is a little bit more loose. And also the enforcement is not very strong or not carried out very much. There's just not much enforcement. So a lot of people feel much more comfortable. Things are a little bit easier. Mexico traditionally has been more open to integrative therapies. A lot of people actually are going to Mexico for cancer treatments because they are rooted in their tradition that's using a more natural approach.
You are more of a fan of using allogenic stem cells, specifically umbilical stem cells. What is the screening process for sourcing umbilical stem cells?
The sourcing will be different for a different company. So my company, Char Biologics, the way we approach it, first of all, you have to adhere to the same standard as the standards set out by American Association of Tissue Banks. So they govern tissue transplants. So what we do is that we're providing a tissue product. We're not manufacturing anything. We're just extracting from nature, right? So we're not, in a sense, we're not making a drug. We're just getting a tissue that's made in nature and then giving it to somebody else. It's not that different from organ transplantation or blood transfusion. So that really is not controlled by the FDA, but there are standards, medical standards set out by different medical boards. And also there's American Association of Tissue Banks, and that sets out standard for how you obtain tissue and how you process it. So you have to really, the standards mostly is concern of infectious diseases. So the matching process, that's a whole other issue. But as far as getting the tissue and putting in another person's body, what's safe? So they have certain pathogens that they have to screen for. And that's HIV, hepatitis, herpes families, and there are also syphilis and Epstein-Barr, et cetera, CMV. So there's a whole set of pathogens that are screened for.
And those screenings happen like in a lab? They're testing the actual tissue for this stuff? Or how does that work?
They can screen the donor. And then once they get the tissue, they will screen the tissue itself.
Okay.
So they actually are testing to see if there's any of these pathogens.
Is there a way to tell if the donor has been given the COVID vaccine?
That is difficult to tell by a test. But the screening process, so we do have the screening process by basically going through the medical records and asking the mother. So,
and also, I've heard you say that there is no payment for donating this tissue. It's a donation. And so really, there's no motivation to be deceptive. From the donor has no motivation to lie in the screening process because they're not being compensated for it.
Right, exactly. And that's in the U.S. So can't speak for other countries because I've heard of Russian women selling their aborted fetuses. But that's in other countries. I think they did that in Ukraine. However, in this country, you cannot give them even a token gift because that can be conceived as buying the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strict donation, and the mothers are screened for a very long list of things, including their own health history, their family history, their travel exposures, work history, toxic exposures, their sexual history, the environmental process or even genetic, a process has been screened for. And once the tissue is obtained, they go through the pathogen, the infectious diseases screening, and also some genetic disease screening. And we only accept mothers. So our company only accepts mothers who have not gone through the COVID vaccination because of the concern. There's a whole range of concerns that I'm just not willing to put that potential risk, pose that risk to any of the people who are seeking longevity or recovery from a chronic illness. So I use this product on myself every 3 months. So I certainly don't want any potential damage. And I, to me, it is my obligation to make sure that I'm not causing harm. So COVID vaccinated donors are screened out, and we only accept U.S. donors and only mothers who have elected to do C-section. So we are not taking any mothers who are giving vaginal births, because when the baby goes through the vaginal canal, you can imagine umbilical cords, placenta, everything is mixed with everything else that's in the vaginal canal. So there's a lot of contamination. But the C-section, it, you know, basically it's a surgical field. Everything is sterile.
Yeah. Yeah. And how can we be certain that no babies are harmed in this process for the umbilical stem cells in the United States? I know you mentioned in Russia that...
Well, those are aborted babies. I don't know any doctor or any laboratory that's actually producing any product that's based on abortion or aborted fetuses. We only take donations from live, healthy births, which means the baby is alive, healthy, crying, mother's holding the baby, and they cut the cord with the placenta. Usually they're going to toss it in the trash.
Wow.
Right? We just tell them, please don't toss in the trash. Can we please use this to help people?
Yeah.
And the mother said, yes. So that's no babies harmed whatsoever. Actually, if the baby has any problems, we won't even take the tissue because we're worried.
Yeah, like, you want to save it for the baby.
No,
yeah.
What's wrong with the baby? If the mother has a fever, we don't take the tissue.
Okay.
Because we don't know what's going on. There's risk. So if the mother has any acute, if there's an acute or emergency C-section, we don't take that. Why is there an emergency? Some problems, right? There's some issues. We only like planned, healthy, calm.
Yeah. So pretty meticulous screening overall.
Yes.
Can you give us an overview of some of the most common conditions that stem cells are used to treat?
Actually, I cannot use the word treat except for two separate occasions where the FDA actually have given indications. So when you say the word treat, that means that you're actually obtained FDA approval. So if we're tailoring our language toward a condition, then FDA has to approve. There are only two conditions FDA has approved for stem cell therapy. One is for hemoreconstitution, which means replacing your whole blood system. After a person has autoimmune disease or blood cancer, you can wipe out their immune system and you form new immune system by getting bone marrow donation or transplantation or a umbilical cord blood transplantation. So that is FDA indicated. The other one is acute graft versus host disease. So that's when the graft can attack a person's body. So when an organ transplanted. So when there's acute issue in pediatric cases, then you can use stem cells to calm down that immune reaction. That said, research has shown an incredible array of benefits for almost all of the organ systems. This is, where I teach our doctors in the academy I founded, American Academy of Integrative Cell Therapy, specifically to teach them different evidence for different issues. So from head to toe, from brain diseases. There's, we've had great success helping patients with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, MS, right, multiple sclerosis, and or stroke recovery, and nervous system issues like peripheral neuropathy, and we've helped people with heart problems. So, after heart attack or atherosclerosis, right, the clotting of your arteries throughout the body, and it's great for lung recovery. I've helped multiple COPD patients to do very well, and lung injuries. We've helped probably the first reported case of recovery of a 9/11 responder, probably the first 9/11 victim to become pretty much free of lung disease after a lot of his colleagues have died. He's in the New York Special Forces, and a lot of his colleagues in their prime, in their 40s, have died after being in the pit for months. He was in the pit for 8 months.
Wow.
So he could barely go upstairs. He didn't know how long he had to live, and we did stem cell therapy, and now he's sprinting. He's got his life back. He said he wants to be the first 9/11 responder to live to 100.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
Was that with IV infusion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe a better question would have been, what can't stem cells treat? Because traditionally, I've always thought of stem cells as something that maybe you get if you have like an injury. And I didn't realize up until recently that stem cells can actually be used to treat autoimmune conditions and a whole host of conditions that you mentioned. You've also treated children with autism using stem cells. What kinds of, or not treated, but you've helped children with autism.
We treat patients. We don't treat the condition.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. What kind of changes have you seen there?
Going from nonverbal to start talking, right? Expressing themselves, communicating with parents, from not being continent to being able to control their bowel movements and telling parents, you know, pee pee, or, you know, start to, you know, making life a lot easier and, better eye contact, better, rapport, right? Social interactions and, being able to advance academically better. So comprehending, doing homework, and then a lot of it's also social interaction, being able to work, you know, cooperate with our peers. So becoming more of a social member. So the connection, the human connection, and that's the part I think that means a lot for our parents.
Yeah.
But any gain, but we've seen a lot of gains just improving and even their physical condition. So sometimes they have discomforts. And of course we help everything all at once. And the beauty about stem cells is that it helps multiple issues all at once. Like there's one child, he had a lot of gut issues, colitis, and that was causing some of this agitation and also, you know, this raging autoimmune issue basically. So now we helped his gut repair through stem cells and peptides and also certain nutritional supplements. So his gut is doing better. And then his ability to socialize and to perform is better. So it's all tied in together.
It's amazing. Yeah, it makes
sense.
But
I was telling you about different organs and people, musculoskeletal, when you talked about repair, that's like the bread and butter of stem cell therapy. And that's like, of course, we know that one works. But for different organs, you know, liver, we can talk more about, you know, other conditions, but just about every organ that we've worked on.
RFK Jr. has posted that he utilizes stem cells for a neurological condition called spasmodic dysphonia, which is his voice condition. How have you seen stem cells work in reversing neurological disorders like that?
That particular condition, I don't know. You know, we have to know what's causing that. So I'm not sure of how well he has responded. So different conditions may respond differently, and some are a little bit more entrenched. So for his condition, I mean, it's not easy. The nerve, there's some nerve damage. For whatever reason, whatever that caused it. Same thing with people with nerve injuries, let's say in their ears, in their hearing, their eyes. But I've seen I've seen some evidence of hearing repair and evidence of vision repair. So even we had a patient which was really remarkable. This patient had optic nerve damage when he was 9 years old during a brain surgery. They were trying to, I think, take out a brain tumor, and they damaged the optic nerve. So he was blind in one eye. But with one IV infusion, when we followed up with him like about a month later, he's starting to see in that eye.
That's
so amazing. So that was, I think, 49. Yeah, that's like 40-year-old injury. And to be able to actually start seeing, to me, is something that's just incredible. I would have never guessed as a doctor. We do tend to be more conservative. I mean, we're hopeful and you know, we try to be optimistic. But there are certain things that you just don't want to give false hope for, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody has been blind in the one eye for 40 years, you don't tell them, yeah, I think with stem cells you can see. But he started seeing. So there are things that are just are thrilling for a doctor to see.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Are stem cells being used yet to support women's hormones or fertility?
It hasn't been used that much, but I've seen that. I mean, I've seen that in myself. You know, at my age, we can talk about that age, you know, I'm still menstruating, right? So, and I've seen actually patients getting stem cell treatments and then improving in the hallmarks of reproductive health, the AMH. So that tells you about your ovarian reserve and actually improving. So significant increase.
Wow.
After stem cell therapy. And I've definitely seen people getting pregnant, you know, after having difficulty conceiving for years, for this one instance, 4 years. And then within 2 months of stem cell therapy, pregnant, and now with a live, healthy baby.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I've definitely seen that.
So you're 54. You still have a normal menstrual cycle, which is kind of unheard of in today's day and age. I feel like I keep hearing that menopause is starting kind of sooner and sooner. But are you saying this is potentially like a way to delay that process for women?
Yes, I do think so. So in animal studies, which is really fun, they were giving stem cells to perimenopausal rats. So I didn't even realize that rats were menopausing. You know, I don't remember seeing any rats with blood. But they found out that by giving these animals stem cells, the ovary size increased and the number of follicles increased. Their estrogen level went up. Their FSH and TH, which usually go up with age, went down. So everything is harmonizing and their number of pregnancy went up.
Wow.
So that's pretty good evidence.
Really good. And how often are you utilizing stem cell therapy? I think you said that the thing you do most often is the IV infusions. Is that right? And like, mm-hmm. How often are you doing those?
I'm doing it every 3 months. So that has been 9 years. That's the only thing that I have been consistent with. Because people ask me, what do you do for anti-aging? And I really have not been very consistent with anything except for trying to eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I do pay attention to. I don't want to put junk in my body. But other than that, I don't take many supplements. I don't have the patience. And I'm annoyed with all these supplements, so I'm busy. But stem cell therapy would be the single most consistent because it's easy, right? Once every 3 months, my clinics, please put some cells in my arms, and then we're done.
Well, it's working. I mean, you're 54 and you look 34.
Oh, thank you.
What's the most surprising way that you have seen stem cells transform someone's health?
I think, you know, as a doctor, we like saving lives. So that's probably the most drastic is when you actually saved someone's life. So one case was very early in my stem cell career. That was 9 years ago. My early patient was a liver cirrhosis patient from hepatitis C infection. So because he had prior drug use, he didn't even meet the standard, like he couldn't even get an organ transplant. So he's basically facing death. He was in hospice care. So in hospice, he probably was given, I don't know, a few weeks to live, maybe a month or two, the most. So his brother brought him to my clinic to get stem cell therapy as a last resort. And I gave him a simple IV infusion. At the time, my protocol was that he was supposed to come back in 2 weeks so I can give him the second one. So I gave him a low dose on the first one because I was waiting to give him the adequate dose the second time. And he didn't come in. So I had no idea what happened to this person. And then I was invited to get on a radio interview. And the radio show host was the one that recommended this brother to take this liver cirrhosis patient to me. And then he said, oh, I have a surprise for you. I have the brother of this patient on the line. I was like, really? Oh, cool. I was like, how's your brother doing? He said, well, actually, after the treatment, on the way back, on the drive back to Sacramento from LA, the swelling in his abdomen, because he had big ascites, so huge swelling in the abdomen, very skinny guy, barely had any strength to talk, but his belly was swollen with accumulated fluid.
Hmm.
The swelling went down halfway just on the drive So you can imagine there's huge anti-inflammatory effect. Things are already starting to happen. And then he said within a few weeks, he went to see his brother. The brother was walking back and forth in his garden and was talking on the phone loud like a normal person. So when he was seeing me talk like this, he barely had any strength.
Yeah, I didn't have
energy. So the brother was like, wow, that's, he sounds like a normal person.
Oh my goodness.
A couple months, he went to his liver doctor, specialist, to check on his liver. And his liver function became normal. And so
one IV infusion.
Yes.
Wow.
So my response when I heard that, I said, really? I was in such shock, right?
Yeah.
That was not something I anticipated. It was just an incredible, beautiful surprise to know what the cells could do, right? It may not be what the cells will always do for everybody, but this is the possibility.
Did he come back for more, or was he good with that one?
Unfortunately, what I heard was that he felt so good, so he went back to IV drug use. And then he got, he was arrested. So people don't always do the right things after they get their health back. Just like when there's another COPD lady I treated, she did so well, she went back to smoking. Because she was swearing she would never smoke again because she was facing death, right?
Yeah.
But once she was doing so well, breathing better, walking, you know, she doesn't have to drag an oxygen with her. Then she went back to what she liked doing.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. But as doctors, you know, we see people make choices.
Yep. So what does a stem cell IV infusion cost?
Every clinic's different, of course. The price range from around the world would be between $5,000 to $50,000. So it's a huge range. But at our clinic, we try to keep it reasonable and accessible. So an IV infusion starts at $8,500 at our clinic. But the more product required for each person. So the sicker you are, the older you are, the more aggressive your condition is, and the heavier you are, the more cells you would need. So the more cells, then it can become more costly. So it can go all the way up to about $18,000. And if a person wants to add exosomes, then there's, you know, an additional cost. If they want injections everywhere, sometimes they do, they may need joint injections, then that would be added cost. And if they want facial rejuvenation or hair restoration, then that's additional. And we also do sexual wellness. So you can inject into the penis and vagina. So that's extra.
And what does that do?
Sexual satisfaction, right, for men, girth and length of the penis and the quality of the erection.
Grasshopper on your chair.
And for female, also sexual sensitivity, lubrication, and just overall satisfaction, sensation.
That can't be a pleasant treatment. To have that shot.
It's really
that
not bad. You would be surprised.
Really?
Yeah. It's really not. Of course, we numb the area, but it's people get scared, but everyone's like, oh, that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. There's so many things you just said that I want to touch on in a bit, but I want to talk about the risks a little bit. How do you respond to critics who say that stem cell therapy is unproven or unsafe? And what are the potential risks of stem cell therapy?
Because there's so many types of stem cells, so we have to know what kind of stem cells we're talking about. But if we're talking about the mesenchymal stem cells we're using, people who say that is unproven, that just means the person has not looked at research. So if you actually looked at research from around the world, it's been proven over and over for different conditions, from autoimmune to heart conditions, to lung and liver and the kidneys, for even aging, for frailty, for brain repair. So the evidence is abundant. So when people say not proven, you know, that's what research is for, right? It's to prove whether or not something works. And as far as side effects, I think is one of the safest therapies there is. I always say stem cell therapy, if it has even one of the major side effects of any medications that we use these days, it will be shut down. Even under that kind of scrutiny, it's really hard to find how detrimental it can be. Of course, if a doctor injects in the wrong place, like the Florida clinic that injected people's eyes and they don't know what they're doing and they blinded people. So you can always do wrong things as doctors. right? You can put things in the wrong place and that can cause problems. But if you are conducting your treatment with proper skills and you're well trained, then there's really very little side effects. There could be injection site, redness and swelling. There can be temporary pain. And the worst side effects I've seen, well, some are like during the infusion, some people have a vasovagal response. They get lightheaded, they get sweaty and clammy or heart racing. And then we just slow everything down a little bit and they always recover. We always finish the treatment with no problem. One thing I've noticed is if somebody has a tendency for histamine reactions, they tend to, there's a possibility, not tend to, it's still very, very rare for people to break out with a rash. And it's always self-limiting, right? Always will go away, but some people may have a rash. These are the people who tend to react to everything, to environmental stimulation, to food, or to medication. So they tend to have eczema. So they may be the people that break out with a rash, but is easily, you know, taken care of. And the only other thing I've seen is people have a feverish reaction. And I see that in people. I believe that these people have some kind of underlying infection. I've seen that in myself. The only time I had reaction where there's some kind of response of body ache and kind of like temporary flu-like symptoms is when I had just had a dental procedure where they took out what's called cavitation, so residual.
Yeah,
you're aware of these, from wisdom teeth being pulled and things not healing properly, where there's a pocket of collection of toxins and sometimes infection. Yeah, so that's only time. I mean, I've done probably over 40 IV stem cell treatments, and that was the only time that I had a reaction where I was shivering and it was drastic. It was a little concerning, but it was your body mounting this huge attack on what's going through your body. And I've seen that in a couple of other patients, but that will probably be the most drastic response. But other than that, I've seen, if we inject stem cells into a joint space, a confined space, sometimes there's an immune reaction with accumulation of fluid, immune cells, and all of a sudden your knee gets more stiff and swollen. So there's a temporary, it's kind of like...
So everything's going to that area to repair it.
Just like when you're trying to repair, you know, a place, there's temporary swelling. So that could happen.
Yeah. Do you have any concerns with the fact that stem cells contain DNA?
I don't. I'll tell you why. For one, the cells rarely stay in your body. What we're counting on, like I said, is a pharmacy. It's a smart pharmacy. It goes into your body, deliver all these molecules to help you repair. And the pharmacy actually shuts down and go away because there's a lifespan for the pharmacy. So the smart pharmacy has an expiration date, basically. So majority, I would say 98%, no one knows exactly how many cells actually stay in the body. I think the more depleted you are, possibly the more it stays, but we don't know for sure. But maybe no more than 2-3% actually stay in your body. Hmm. The ones that stay tend to adapt to you, just like we've seen human stem cells living in the animal's body, and they just become part of the skin. You know, it's fine. It just adapts to the animal. So there's ability of these cells to just live with the host. However, vast majority of them actually die. So you don't have to worry about the DNA. The ones that actually stays, because the cells are so young, they have more of ability to adapt to you. Or if they don't, then your body, your immune system will just take them out.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, you're a foreign. We don't want you here. So then they're gone. However, the benefit they produce, because we're not counting on these cells to become a particular cell of your tissue. Because when I help that person, liver cirrhosis patient, to repair, I doubt there are going to be very, very few cells I give him actually went into the liver and became liver cells. That's not how they work. The reason I know is because research after research, all these articles, they're trying to find out what happened when the person got better. Is it because the cells that were given to the patient actually made new cells for the person? It became new cells? or because something else. They always, the result had been consistent. The new tissue was not from the donor. The new tissue is from the person himself.
The body created it.
That's right.
With the help of these stem cells.
Exactly. The cells are like a blast of signals.
Okay.
I tell people it's like a television set. When your body's diseased or old, it's getting blurry. So your body can't figure out what to do. It can't read the message anymore. But if I give you a blast of these intelligent stem cells, all of a sudden, everything becomes high def. Your body's like, oh, that's a no-brainer. This is where I should go and what I need to do. So all of a sudden, the repair can happen.
I want to talk about this concept of mobilizing stem cells within your body, because there are supplements and therapies that claim to have the effect of mobilizing your body's own stem cells, things like hyperbaric oxygen therapy or the supplement Stem Regen or the LifeWave X39 patches. I don't know if you've seen those, but these are just things that I've seen that claim to, just help your body, like the circulation of stem cells within your own body, as I understand it. So I want to get your take on those therapies, one. And I also am curious, like, how that even works. Are we born with a certain amount of stem cells and that's it? Is the body always creating more stem cells? Like, if we're mobilizing these stem cells, are we going to, you know, mobilize them too much to where we're using them up too fast? Like, how does that all work?
We do have a finite number of stem cells. So when we were born, we had a lot of stem cells. I mentioned mesenchymal stem cells, the reserve regenerative cells, right, coordinating your body's ability to repair. So when we were born, every one in 10,000 cells is a mesenchymal stem cell, so sitting on the blood vessels, ready to work, right? And when we become our teenage years, the number is 1 to 100,000. So we've already lost a lot of them, because as they multiply, as they get damaged from just been alive with you, they could die. And they only have so many generations that they can keep replicating. There's a Hayflick principle where they can't multiply beyond certain numbers. So either they exhaust themselves or they get damaged and they die. So even when you're a teenager and you think you're pretty robust and you're invincible, but you have 1/10 the number of stem cells you had compared to when you were born, right? 1/10. And then when you reach your 40s is 1 in 400,000, which means you have a quarter of what you had when you were a teenager. And then when you're in your 80s, you have a fifth of what you had in your 40s. So literally it's dropping off a cliff.
Yeah.
So this is law of nature. There's an attrition rate and you are running out of stem cells. That's why people are getting all these wrinkles. That's why their organs just can't keep up with the demand. And eventually the organs shut down. Everyone has different, you know, places of the weakness. So different people have different failures of different organs, and then that's the end. You know, some people still, some organs, maybe they're doing really well, but some are so depleted. That's the first one that goes out, and then the game over. So we do have a limited supply. And this is why stem cell therapy is so helpful, because it's giving you what you've lost.
So these products, like, do they even work, or are they mobilizing too many stem cells and using them up, like using our bodies on stem cells up at a faster rate than we should be using them?
Well, the more you replicate, the more you're going to use their lifespan up, right? So eventually you are going to run out. It's not like they're limited. Like I said, there's the limit of how many generations you can have. So you make them replicate, and then you're going to run out of generations. So yes, but when do you run out? You know, that's the question. You can help them, mobilize them, get them out of the bone marrow, which is what Stem Regen does, or bring them to life so they can multiply and help your body. But yes, you have a finite supply. And it's hard to say, you know, by taking certain supplements, you can nourish your stem cells, right? You can make them healthier and live longer. In that sense, you're preserving your supply. So,
is that what Stem Regen does?
No, Stem Regen basically free your stem cells from the bone marrow, because a lot of times they're trapped by certain adhesion molecules and they're kept in the bone marrow. But just because they're in your bone marrow doesn't mean that they're helping anything, because okay, they're just sitting there. So your body may have a place of injury, or you have full body inflammation, but it doesn't mean that they're out there helping you. So if you take them out, or if you use stem regen to kick them out, then they can circulate and help you repair. The number of circulating stem cells correlates with how fast you can heal. So by sitting in the bone marrow is not helping. So you can drill into the bone, free them out, and put in the blood. Now they're helping you. So yeah, so stem regen doesn't really make you have more stem cells. It just makes you have more circulating stem cells. Of course, you know, any cell will have a finite lifespan. Sometimes when they fight your battles, let's say they're mobilized and they get to circulate and they find an area of inflammation. When they're trying to fight your inflammation, they can also be killed. It's like the soldier going to battle, they can be killed by the battle.
Yeah. But otherwise, a lot of them would just be sitting there not doing anything. Like if we didn't do these things to help mobilize them.
You can mobilize them by exercise can help. Hyperbaric oxygen can help. And trauma can mobilize them.
Oh, really?
So big trauma sometimes get them, wake them up, and then they go into go into your system.
Do we want to be careful and not mobilize them too much because then we're like using them up too quickly, or do you feel like it's worth it to keep them mobilized, keep them active?
That's an interesting question. Yeah,
that's my hesitation with like stem regen. I'm like, I don't want to mobilize too many of these things. Like, I want them to be there later when I need them more.
Run out of engine. It's okay. We have all these stem cells that can be given to
you.
Yeah,
that's true.
Don't worry so much.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're doing the therapies, they can really work well in conjunction with these other things that we're talking about.
Yeah, so I do use stem regen in our treatments because a lot of the cells I'm giving patients may end up getting back into the bone marrow. So we want them to come out and really help the body repair. But if I'm just counting on a person's own bone marrow stem cells, they're not going to be as active and as potent as these very young stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
So I would prefer, and also they are an extra help, right? So instead of using the more tired, older and stem cells from a person's own, and also they're less. So the older you are, the less they are. So then I can give them something that's abundant and more potent.
Yeah. What role does inflammation play in the body's ability to utilize stem cells?
Inflammation can trigger your stem cells to become more alive, basically. So some doctors ask me, oh, should I calm the inflammation first? The person is really inflamed. So let me reduce the inflammation and then give the person stem cells. But research have shown that inflammation actually are going to make the stem cells work harder. So instead of just laying, I do a little bit here and there, all of a sudden they're much more active. They're giving you a lot more of what they have to offer. So it's like they are excited by the mission. So inflammation is not necessarily detrimental to stem cells. They could be. I mean, they could harm the stem cells, but if they make the stem cells work so much harder and better, there's no reason to not have inflammation, right? Mm-hmm. Inflammation can get the stem cells more into gear.
What are the most effective ways to harness the power of stem cells when it comes to slowing or reversing aging in the skin?
Well, I think the current therapies that are effective at rejuvenating the skin all resort to some kind of energy therapy or some kind of mild damage and agitation. So you can mildly damage your skin by light, right? You can use laser, other kinds of light. It doesn't have to be damaged, but red light can activate your cells and stem cells as well. And you can use sound therapy for skin. You can use mechanical trauma, microneedling. So all those will actually call on the cells to come to the area and come to life. And they will send out more signals. So your skin cells will start to produce more collagen and will break down. So they will help you break down scar tissue, lay more, more collagen, more blood supply. And more blood supply, of course, means more nutrient delivery. So you want to give the skin more signals so it will attract more stem cells.
Of course, like giving it a mission, like you were talking about earlier, when you're causing those micro injuries and then doing that in combination with stem cells, the stem cells are like, okay, let's get to work and repair this and make it better than it was before.
I love the combination. So you can use exosomes, which is a secretion product of stem cells. Just use those alone. You can put it on the face. They will absorb directly into the skin, so you don't have to inject. And then you can use microneedling or other kind of energy machines to agitate the skin and allow regeneration to happen. Or you can inject stem cells directly into the skin. And we've seen just incredible results with both. But the stem cells is beautiful because, like I said, it's a little pharmacy. So I'm injecting these cells that's going to live in your skin for months, and they will keep secreting exosomes. So it's like an exosome factory for your skin.
So which method do you think is more effective? Is it microneedling with the exosomes or injecting the stem cells directly?
I personally will prefer the stem cells because it will give you longer lasting results, because it's going to sit there and keep giving you more exosomes. But exosomes, you don't have to inject, so there's a little more comfortable.
I was going to ask,
But
are the stem cell injections painful into the face?
it's a little bit. We do use numbing cream, but some people tolerate it really well, and my skin is very sensitive, and it really hurt.
I've seen a lot of products that have stem cells from plant sources. What's your take on that?
Okay, so people want to jump on the stem cell wagon, and they think by using anything, if there are stem cells in it, and that's as if that qualifies as stem cell therapy. So when people use the word plant stem cells, I always ask them, I said, are you a plant? Because if you are a plant, this product's going to work very well for you, because that's the whole point about stem cells, is that it gives life to that life form. So if you're not a plant, then that's not tailored. All the chemicals these cells secrete are not going to be tailored to you. So it doesn't make that much sense. So to me, that's more of a marketing gimmick. Whatever species you are, you need to use the stem cells for your species. So we have perfectly good human stem cells, and that's what's going to speak to the body, your body. Your skin cells are going to respond to the signals of the human stem cells.
And you have a product with umbilical stem cells, is that right?
It's called Chara Omni. So that was I formulated that about 6 years ago, because I couldn't find a good all natural product. I wanted to find something that's 100% natural, and it was somehow a great challenge. And then I realized I have stem cells on my hand, and then I'm familiar with all these peptides. So why don't I put some of these cutting edge stuff into a skincare product that's 100% natural? So I don't put anything that could be jeopardizing human health, or with hormone disruption, et cetera. So that's how I came up with this product. So,
And you said that the stem cells, they're not live, but they still have components that are super beneficial for the skin.
yeah, so contained within a cell membrane are all these growth factors and all these signal molecules, including micro pieces of RNA, and they can help with cellular repair. So, and the exosomes also contain a lot of different lipids and microRNA pieces, and they can actually go into the cell nucleus and help promote the repair of the DNA. So the benefit can be short term, but there's also a longer term benefit, because if your cells are fixed on the DNA level, then it can give you a longer lasting benefit.
Are stem cells effective in boosting hair growth or reversing gray hairs?
I've heard people talking about hair turning black. So in some individuals, not everybody, we can say that it's going to turn everyone's hair back to the original color. But I've definitely heard people saying that they have less and less gray,
And is that
which
with injections in the scalp?
even with IV treatment. So that's total rejuvenation, right? The graying of the hair is still a sign of aging, of the hair follicle, aging process, your melanocyte, et cetera. But the hair restoration to increase the number or the vitality of the hair follicles, making them more active. And we've seen great results either with stem cells or exosomes. So we can inject or just put the exosomes on the surface and use microneedling to or other technologies to agitate the scalp. There are people who just did injections. I think in my early career, I did just injections. I didn't even add microneedling. Just that was enhancing the growth of hair a lot. So it's pretty awesome. I think two sessions, the hair was filling up, you know, when there were a lot of thinning on the, in the temporal area.
Wow. You've mentioned exosomes a few times. Can you give our audience a little description and differentiate exosomes from stem cells?
Yeah. So exosomes are nothing but little packets sent out by stem cells or any cells. Cells can secrete exosomes. So exosomes are like little things that butt off cells. So I call it, it's like the cell sweat, like the sweating of the cell. So think of it like beating up of this, you know, this little piece from the cell surface.
That's a great analogy. So with the stem cell, you're getting the stem cells with the exosomes are just a part of the stem
exactly.
cell.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas isolated exosomes are, it's kind of a different thing.
Yeah. So a lot of times companies will make the cells multiply and culture them in a medium and putting them, you know, sit around for some time, and they will keep producing and spewing out all these little beads of packets of information. And then they collect these little packets and give it to people for therapy. However, the cells also secrete a lot of things that are not included in these packets. So they're, because they're not a one-trick pony, they can secrete various things. And they can secrete things into a larger vesicles that's not included in a lot of these exosome products. Exosomes are smaller packets. They only they range between 50 to 200 microns. But cells can make packets that are a lot bigger, but that's excluded from these exosome product. So on one hand, you have these free agents that are not quite in the product, or you have these larger vesicles that are excluded. And the cells, what they can do also is to deliver and donate mitochondria. So if you have young, healthy stem cells, they can donate to your cells these young, healthy mitochondria. And that's, of course, not in the exosome product. So the cells can do so much more, not to mention the cells is a living entity. The exosomes is done. It can't produce, can't respond. It's a packet. And once it's delivered in the body, it hits certain receptors, then it's done its job, it's over. But the cells can keep producing these entities while in the human body. The cells generally live for about 1 to 3 months in the human body. And during this time, it's going to keep producing these exosomes and producing them in a fashion that's more tailored toward what your body needs. So it's a smart pharmacy, right? It's not a blind pharmacy. I give everybody the same drugs. And that's what's happening in exosome production is the cells is like, well, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But in this environment, I'm just going to produce this. So it's not tailored to a person. But if I give cells to a person, one person's condition is very different from another. So the cells can respond.
Okay. And you mentioned that you do microneedling with exosomes. Why does it work well in that instance? And are there any other occasions for which you will only use exosomes and not stem cells?
In the face, it's easy. It's quick and easy because it's absorbed by the skin.
Is it a smaller like particle, like easier
it's
to
very,
get
very
in
tight.
The skin?
Yeah. The cells are really large. So they can't really penetrate the skin barrier.
That's why they have to be injected.
Yeah, the exosomes, no problem. We even put the exosomes into the nasal membrane because that can be taken up by your nerves directly into the brain.
Wow.
So we utilize their small size because they can cross the blood-brain barrier, but cells cannot. So for the most part. And I see almost no instance that I we'll only use exosomes and not stem cells, to be honest. Exosomes is easy. Some people think that because the FDA only is more obsessed with regulating cellular products, that if they give a product that's not cellular, but a vesicle, you know, these tiny packets, that the FDA is not going to have a problem with. The FDA is slightly more relaxed, but not that much, because these are production, you know, these are still products from the cells. But exosome became all the rage because the companies producing these products tell people, oh, you don't have to worry about regulation, that this is, you know, not as strictly regulated. So that contributed to the popularity. There are conceivably, possibly, someone may react to cell surface markers, but not to these little packets of information. So that's possible. I have not personally seen it. So I think it's more theoretical. Exosomes may be a little easier to manage. The cells are living entities. So how do you freeze them so you can use them easily, transporting them without damaging them, so that when you unfreeze them, that they're still alive? And that's more of a challenge. So it's more cumbersome. So there are certain things that are a little harder to use cells, but I will always choose cells when it's possible because of the longer lasting benefits, because it does more than what exosomes can do.
Outside of stem cell therapy, what are some of your favorite biohacks to support health and longevity?
I would say peptides would be my top.
Do you have any like favorite peptides?
Yes. So we actually always give people BPC-157 and TB-500 as part of the regimen, because they can help so many organ systems repair at the same time. So it's a little bit more targeted in a sense. It's giving you a little bit more direction for the body. So BPC-157, TB-500 are both really good for the brain, for the immune system, and for musculoskeletal repair. And the BPC is great for gut repair, and TB-500 great for the heart. So now I'm covering a lot of territory. And on top of that, I use that probably for a couple months, and then 2 to 3 months, I take a break, and then I do another two to three months. So I like, you know, covering a lot of ground, right?
Yeah.
And again, one reason I love peptides is simple, it's quick. I don't like taking that many pills. It's pretty elegant, because these are natural signals that your body gradually lose as we age again. And then there's the growth hormone set. So tesamorelin or apremorelin, CJC-1295, those can help enhance the growth hormone production in your body, which is a youth hormone. So now you can repair more effectively. It helps your body to have recomposition, so you can gain more muscle and lose fat. So it helps, especially as we age, right? It's harder to keep a particular physique. So that's another one that's really awesome for repair and for physical, just for physicality. And then...
Do you work with patients in your clinic to optimize personal peptide protocols?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing we do.
Cool.
We have a lot of peptides. So GHK copper is great for skin, hair, and also for the brain, for wound repair. So that's a great one. And then Epitalon is probably one of my favorite, because it's one of the few things that have been shown to extend telomeres, and it rejuvenates your cardiovascular system.
Wow.
So it actually make your cardiovascular system younger, and it protects you against all age-related diseases. We have to thank the Russians for discovering all these peptides and for having done so much study on them. So a lot of studies came from Russia, and they've shown just pretty remarkable benefits.
What else do you do? What's a day in your life look like in terms of your wellness habits and protocol?
I wish I have all day just biohacking, because that's
what
some people do, right?
It's true, yeah.
You wake up, do some sun gazing, right? Do some grounding. Uh-huh.
And use go do some, take a cold plunge, sauna,
exercise, and you know, right, sauna's fantastic. And then Yeah. So there are different frequency devices. I have a chair shift wave I haven't done for a long time. It's hard to find time, even for what I have. Sometimes it's hard to rotate through, but some people do have all day, you know, that's all they do. And that's one way of living, you know,
Very many people, but there's a few of them out there,
right? Do some yoga. And then, but as far as biohacking, sauna, I think it's phenomenal. It's one of the best detox ways to detox, and it's very gentle.
I love the sauna.
Yeah, sauna is fabulous. Massages, you know, I love massages. And light. So I do have a light device that I actually took with me on my trip to Asia, just in case. So I try to boost my immune system. I actually caught a little cold. I'm not sure who gave it to me in China, but I recovered pretty quickly. So I quickly shined the light on a setting. There are different settings for different organs.
Which one do you have?
It's called Erconia.
Okay.
So it is prescription use, this machine. We use that in our clinic. So that's another cool thing. Even though I give patients stem cells, I can give them peptides to target different organs, but I can also use laser to guide cells into a particular area.
Wow.
So if I focus the light on the brain, then more cells will be attracted and stay in the brain area.
That's
if I want to heal the particular joint, I can shine the light on the joint or any internal organ that the patient is interested in putting more attention on.
So during the infusion,
yes,
you will sometimes use the light,
all the time,
and zero it in on a certain area that the patient needs.
Yeah,
you know,
we always
healing
offer
in.
That.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we actually stick a patient in a frequency bed. So this is a light bed with a quantum frequency, and we put the patient in the bed. So that helped mobilize, you know, help their to calm more the inflammation, elevate their cellular energy. And then we give them the infusion, but we actually do ozone therapy to boost their immune system, kill off some pathogens, and activate their own antioxidant system and super oxygenate their system.
Oh my goodness. You guys do it all.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to plan a visit.
I have a
one of these
protocol.
Days. Yeah, it sounds like it. That's amazing. The stem cell world is such a fast growing space. What's next? What's on the horizon in stem cells?
Well, there's some new kids on the block. At one point, I think a lot of people are going for what's called V-cells. The research is just not as robust as mesenchymal stem cells. That's why it's still the gold standard.
What is a V-cell?
V-cell is a very small embryonic-like stem cell. So we also can do that in our clinic. But just the research is, there's not as much, but some people are firm believers. So we do provide that, but it's not a focus. There's another one that's called MuCell that got made popular because of the Kardashians again. So they went to get a MuCell infusion. So that's something that could be really exciting. That's a subpopulation of mesenchymal stem cells. So a particular lab can enhance the proportion of these cells and give it to patients because these cells are able to become any tissue in the body. So they have more ability to transform.
They can become the tissue versus
yes.
repairing
right.
it.
So mesenchymal stem cells can become the tissue to some extent, but it's possible is because of this subpopulation. And the mechanism that it does the transformation is really fun because they actually gobble up your bad cells.
Wow.
So if your cells are damaged, not good, they will eat it up. And while it eats, it will digest the DNA. And then that fragment of the DNA will trigger the cell to become you. So I mean, that's fun, right? You got someone to digest you and then becomes you. So that's a really interesting thing. But you mentioned DNA. Now I remember your question about
I was
the
thinking
DNA
about that
in the
too.
Body. I want to tell you really, because you're a mother as well. I want to mention this kind of, you know, tidbit that's really fascinating is that they found out that mothers who have been pregnant and give birth to a baby, compared to the mothers of the same age but did not have that pregnancy, their biological age is 5 months younger
Because they have DNA from their child.
Because they've gone through the pregnancy process. And what I believe is that we all know when the mother's pregnant with the baby, there's a huge exchange going on. The baby's stem cells is circulating the mother because we found out there are Y chromosomes in females' body. Mothers who have given birth to male children.
Wow.
Right. So the X is just harder to detect, right? If you have just female daughter, have daughters, but you have sons, then definitely they found Y chromosomes in all your tissue, in your brain, in your breasts and other organs. So we know that there's DNA exchange. And
interesting.
And they actually found a correlation. The mothers with more Y chromosomes have less risk of dementia. So it's really interesting.
I was just going to say, can that contribute to feeling good during pregnancy? Like,
absolutely.
Especially towards the end, because I always feel like superwoman, towards the end of
the glow,
of pregnancy.
Right?
Yeah.
The glow, and also the remission of autoimmune diseases is a known fact that people with autoimmune diseases tend to go into remission during pregnancy.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and what's really interesting, just to put people's mind at ease about the DNA exchange in the human world, is that 60% of women actually have Y chromosomes in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And majority of them cannot be accounted for by having had male children. And they were looking at all possibilities. Oh my God, is it because the woman had a male sibling that didn't get born, right? There was a miscarriage. So the male sibling, there was a demise, but then the DNA was circulating at the same time as the female, and the female got born. So that's a possibility. Or the female had some kind of miscarriage of male fetuses, right? So in their life, they had all these miscarriages, and somehow the male fetus got the DNA circulating in the body. But that's, all these things are minuscule. So the only explanation they could come up with is through male-female intercourse that there is deposit of Y chromosomes in the female's body. And apparently it stayed somewhere throughout the body. So 60% of the women actually have Y chromosomes in the body. So if you think you're such a pure entity, that I'm an XX female, right? My chromosomes. You're mistaken, because 60% of the chance is that you have Y chromosomes in your body.
Okay, that is wild.
So I want people to understand that it's not such a big deal as you think. Oh my God, I got other people's DNA in my body. I welcome other people's DNA in my body. It's like, well, okay, come join the party. It's part of human existence.
Yeah. Wow. That's fascinating. Dr. Joy, thank you so much. This conversation has been so interesting and enlightening. Where can people find you, and how can people come visit your clinic?
The best place to find me is I have a personal website, joykongmd.com. So there are all these things that I'm doing, including my academy, the cream. And so everything I do is there. Oh, I also wrote a book. It's called Tiger of Beijing. It's my memoir. So they can find that there as well. It's about
very cool.
How I came to the U.S. and how I survived. It's only about this 3 years of very dramatic time in my life.
Wow.
And they can also learn more about stem cell therapy or holistic way of life by visiting my YouTube channel, Joy Kong MD. So I talk about everything when it comes to stem cells, and I have lectures on there. And then I have my podcast, the Dr. Joy Kong podcast. And, I interview wonderful experts in different arenas when it comes to health, and also both mental and physical health. So I don't know if you know, I am a trained psychiatrist. So
yes, I did see that.
Right. So mental health is important, but I want to bring holistic health into mental health, and it has become a new trend now. I think there's more. Yeah, people pay more attention to the integration of the two.
Absolutely.
So and people also welcome to come to my Instagram. It's just Dr._Joy_Kong, so they can ask me questions, and I always try to respond to people.
Love it. Thank you so much, Dr. Joy.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been such a pleasure, Bethany.
Oh.